We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall. It is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Joe Sheehan is on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. Sheehan writes for Baseball America and Sports Illustrated, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. What's happening, Joe? How are you?
Pretty good, guys. Heading out to the stadium tonight to catch the second game of this day-night doubleheader. I got to check to see. I'm not sure how they shuffled the pitching, but I think I'm getting James Paxton, which should be fun.
Ooh, yeah. That'll be a very fun little game.
It was Yu Darvish on the mound for a very Coorsy game last night between the Cubs and the Rockies. The Cubs are bad on the road. They're a good team. They're a great team at home. The Cubs are 24-11 at home, 13-17 on the road. And I guess in a general sense, the idea of home field advantage in baseball is kind of strange. It's not like other sports. It doesn't really correlate to victory opportunity or chances much as other sports. In your knowledge, Joe, to the best of your experience, are there reasons why some teams are better or worse on the road outside of wacky park factors?
Yeah, I was going to say the Rockies, I think, have the largest home field advantage in history, but that's the special circumstances of Coors Field. There are cases in history where teams were overly built to their home park. You think about the Red Sox not having left-handed pitching in Fenway. You think about the Cubs having a lot of power in Wrigley Field back in the day. You don't see that as much anymore. I think just we have better information, and we understand that mapping your team to your home park, think about those turf teams for Whitey Herzog in the 80s. You just don't see as much of that anymore. The parks aren't as different as they used to be. I mean, you just don't have a situation where there's the Astrodome here and Fenway Park here. There aren't the disparity of ballparks there used to be. The absence of turf has really changed, building your team to a park. And even, I understand the numbers you're throwing out here, but over 40% of a season, home road splits are air. They're completely meaningless.
So since we've talked last, though we talked a lot about Craig Kimbrell when we last spoke, the Cubs have acquired him. They seem fit to add more bullpen help to the back end, perhaps. What would be on your wish list for them at this point, knowing that Kimbrell will at some point be closing games and getting the final three?
The one thing I think they've been missing the last couple of years, since basically they traded for Chapman, of course Chapman went to free agency, is the power lefty. Kyle Ryan, since that early bump, he had a really bad start, if I remember correctly, like the first week of the season. Mm-hmm. He's been reasonably effective. They have all of these one-inning right-handers and Kinsler and Cishek and Strope and Edwards, and Kimbrell's just going to add to that. Now, Montgomery's been good in that multiple-inning role, and he's not really a power guy. He's really a go-through-the-lineup-once, get-ground-balls type. But some fire-breathing left-hander, somebody from that Will Smith class. Now, Smith is probably going to be priced as a closer, so I'm not sure if you're necessarily going to want to be able to go out and get him. But something, some hard, fire-breathing left-hander. Like, if you look at last night, somebody to face Ryan McMahon in that situation. I think that's the one thing that I'd probably go out, because they've got a million right-handers. And they're all kind of, they're not cut from the same cloth. Some get grounders, some get strikeouts, but they've got plenty of those. But some fire-breathing lefty would be the one thing I'd probably go look for.
What does the early bifurcation of the standings across the board in both leagues mean for the remaining baseball? What does it mean for the trade market when we've got, it's the middle of June, not even, and Minnesota's up 10.5, Houston's up 9, the Dodgers are up 10.5. I mean, it's really crazy to see this sort of bifurcate this early.
Yeah, well, the National League's a little more competitive. I think it's 10 or 11 teams have a shot at the playoffs. The AL's ridiculous. There are five playoff spots, and right now only six teams have better than a 10% chance at them. That's just not entertaining. And I'm somebody who defends baseball's competitive balance, but the American League has gotten a little bit out of control. The problem is the bad teams don't have a lot of talent to trade. The bad teams are bad because they're bad. If I could borrow from the only rule that has to work.
That's
guys.
Some analysis right? there.
I know. It's great to come on every week and talk to you guys. that's the thing. I mean, if you look at it, I feel like the Giants are going to run the trade deadline. Madison Bumgarner. Well, I guess Max Muncy is responsible for trading him now. Mm-hmm. But you look at the bullpen they have: Will Smith, Mark Melanson, Tony Watson. They can actually trade three relievers and still actually have a pretty good bullpen. But I mean, the bad teams are, you know, the Marlins, I guess Jose Urania, I guess if somebody wants Starlin Castro. You look at the Mariners, I mean, they just signed Wade LeBlanc. I don't think they're going to put him on the market. The Royals, yes, if Danny Duffy can string together four good starts, but really the bad teams don't have the trade value that they might have in other seasons. And that's the bifurcation. That's the choice. That's the eight teams, nine teams, 10 teams going into a rebuild. I think some of the interesting calls will be on the margins. The Padres are 33-33. They're not supposed to contend this year. They're certainly not going to win the division. But if they're 47-47 in the middle of July, can they reasonably go to their fans and say, "Yeah, we're gonna trade"? I mean, I don't need to tell Sox fans how frustrating it is when your team is three games out of first place and decides to rebuild.
Is Madison Bumgarner back to being Madison Bumgarner from your perspective? Because a lot of Cubs fans would be worried if a team like, oh, I don't know, say the Brewers snagged him for their starting rotation.
No, he hasn't been that guy for 4 or 5 years now. If you look at, there's a real jump in his loss of effectiveness after 2016. He had the non-throwing injury in 2017, the motorcycle accident, 3.95 FIP. Mm-hmm. Last year, missed about 40% of the season, 3.99 FIP. This year, he's made every start, but it's a 3.88 FIP. He is right now a number three starter. I think we're always going to associate him with that run in 2014 with the five shutout innings in Game 7 of the World Series, and you can never take any of that away from him. But he hasn't been a number one type starter in 3 years now, and there's not a whole lot of reason to believe he's going to get back to that level. His performance level at this point is that of a and I'll give him credit for, like I say, he looks like he's healthy again. So say he'll give you the innings and be a number two / number three. I'm trying to think if there's a team that he'd be the number one on, like a contending type team. And I don't think so. But there are a lot of teams right now who could use a pitcher like that to bolster the rotation. Effectively, like signing Dallas Keuchel for the rest of the season is equivalent to trading for Madison Bumgarner.
You mentioned the White Sox, and we saw a massive home run from Eloy Jimenez, and we see these occasional bursts of power. We're also seeing a guy who is not playing very well. We know that defense is not going to be his specialty, but the slash line for Jimenez now is .230, .278, .421. That's average on base and slugging, and his weighted runs created plus is 14 points underwater at just 86. As a prospect, we were told, and we know from what he was doing at other levels, high contact, high power, and we're not really seeing it. Do you know why?
He's 22. I think we've been spoiled in the last decade or so. Guys like Trout, Harper, Soto, all these players come to the majors and hit. And even on his own team, I mean, you know, look at Yoan Moncada, who was getting killed last year. I think we have to give these guys a little more breath than we do. Eloy Jimenez has 160 major league plate appearances, and it's not that unusual to see a player come to the majors at 22 and not be able to manage the strike zone. And really, that's what we're talking about here, guys. This is a player who I expect to come to the majors and be 27% strikeout rate, but have a 9-10% walk rate, and the latter of those hasn't been there. He's walked nine times. He's walking about once a week. And that's just not what I expected for him as a hitter. And I think that's the kind of thing that you adjust to in the majors, get used to major league stuff, get used to major league velocity. I'm still a big believer in Eloy's talent. As you mentioned, the game power, when he gets to his power in a game, it's incredibly impressive. I'm probably more concerned about the defense only because when you're 22, you're supposed to have the athleticism to at least fake it in the outfield. And from what I've seen, and I'm not telling you I'm watching 100 innings a week of Eloy Jimenez in the outfield, he just looks like a DH, and I don't think that's who he's going to. I think he should be a better defender than that, but he's been sloppy. He's been awkward. I'd like to see him, you know, show a little better than that over the next 800 innings in the outfield, because he's too young for you to say, okay, we'll just play him at DH. They need to get 5-6 years of him out of the outfield before you start worrying about moving him.
Speaking of defense, Dan and I were obsessing some over Baseball Savant's new stat, the jump rates for outfielders. I don't know if you've dug into this much, but what it seems to be, at least as best I can do it, it's the first 3 seconds of an outfielder's route to the baseball and how much ground they cover. They've got all sorts of new cameras measuring these guys. Is this, in your mind, like, you know, new frontier for measuring defense? Is this going to fix some of the UZR issues that we've had for a little while? Or, you know, where are we at with these new measurements?
I think it starts to break down what we're actually seeing these guys do. And the thing I've always wanted is reaction time, and they folded reaction time into jump. I think reaction time is going to be an incredibly important measure when we talk about infielders. They're just doing it for outfielders now. Mm. But how quickly do you react to the ball? If you watch a, quote, great play, a web jam, if you watch it from start to finish, you'll often see that it begins with the defender breaking the wrong way or hesitating. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll sometimes get a shot of watch a game from behind home plate, and you'll see that, and the guy just stops. And then, of course, he makes the quote-unquote great play by diving at the end of it. The guy who doesn't get on the highlight reel is the one who immediately gets a jump, goes in the right direction, takes the best route, and catches the ball standing there, the Andrew Jones play. Andrew Jones never got the credit he deserved, I think, in a lot of places, because he never made the diving catch, because he never had to make the diving catch. I think this metric is going to go a long way to kind of bridging the gap between the guys we think are great because they make plays at the edge, or should say at the end of a play, and the guys who are great because they make great plays at the beginning of a play.
I'm glad you brought it up, because that always came up when people wouldn't trust their eyes when they were comparing defensive metrics at shortstop between Addison Russell and Javier Baez. Hmm. Because everybody, Baez is just so telegenic and so brilliant and so exciting all the time that it's almost like Addison Russell was boring in how efficiently he was fielding baseballs. And people would remember like an errant throw here or there, but that was one thing that UZR for a while was getting right. It was getting right the fact that those two were comparing exactly as you describe.
Right, because we're not evaluating. We're trying to move from evaluating defense based on how the player made the play to whether the player made the play. And this is an 80-year argument in baseball. Mm. I remember talking about Cal Ripken in the 80s and 90s. Cal Ripken obviously this is pre-Statcast and everything, but he was very good at positioning himself. So he was where the ball was a lot of the time. You go back, people used to talk about Joe DiMaggio. He never dove. He never had to. So this is something we've been trying to get to. And in the miracle that is the 21st century, we now get to actually measure how quick a player starts running for the baseball. I love the future, guys.
Will this help, or does this already help shorten the needed sample size to ascertain a player's defensive quality? Everybody has always said that you need so much so many balls to figure out exactly what's going on with a guy. Or do we need more than this? Is this the first step in shortening that sample size?
Well, we need to learn, you know, how much this stuff varies. Like, we're going to need a large data set to figure out, okay, when can we become confident? When does the data stabilize? There was a big conversation online about this for hitting stats recently. You know, Saros did a piece at the Athletic. We're trying to figure out, when is this stuff real? And yes, the input data, whether it's sprint speed, whether it's exit velocity, launch angle, all of that stuff stabilizes more quickly than batting average. Mm. So having the Statcast data gets us closer to what the player is actually doing. So yeah, Connor, I do think that I will trust the Statcast information, because it's measuring what the player is actually doing more quickly than I'll trust defensive run saved or any of the other metrics that we have, because the inputs, what Statcast is measuring is getting closer and closer to the real skill of defense as opposed to the outputs.
Joe, enjoy the game tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
That's Joe Sheehan. He's brought to you by Campland RV. Head on over to Campland RV for their 58th anniversary sale now through the end of June. Find great deals on RVs and campers. Campland RV. RV buying made easy. Just a short drive off I-94 in Northwest Indiana. We're the Bernstein and McKnight Show. And I guess we are calling this, as it says in front of me, the Culinary Studio.
That's correct.
Because it's the Entercom Culinary Kitchen, and we've made it into our temporary Score Studios. And they've already torn it out. Did you see that? Did you go back there?
I can't believe how quickly they ripped that whole thing falling apart.
We did transition with the morning show yesterday.
Yes.
Did our show in here, and then we come in today, and they've absolutely ripped it down to the studs.
It's like a gutted home. It's like Chip and Joe came through there and ripped everything out.
Can we play a game real quick?
Absolutely. I like playing games.
I'm going to reverse engineer a game we usually play, because we bring up a player sometimes, then we look at his baseball reference page and look at these statistically similar players in baseball history.
I love that game. Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's what I'm going to do, because I found this interesting, and I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole here.
Yeah.
After a break, I'm going to answer this question. We're going to play Who Am I? Okay?
All right.
I'm going to test your knowledge, your awareness of baseball. All I will tell you is I am an active MLB player. This is the career slash line. My career slash line is 263, 353, 498. It's a career OPS of 851. Okay?
Okay.
You know that. Now, I am going to give you statistically similar batters through my age.
Alrighty.
Okay? These are the most statistically similar batters to my career performance through my current age.
Leandro Barbarossa.
Not on the list. Okay, you ready?
Yes, go.
Frank Howard, Gil Hodges, Willie Stargell, Jack Clark, Mark Teixeira, Jermaine Dye, Joe Carter, Jose Canseco, Boog Powell, and Paul Konerko.
Certainly paints a particular athletic picture of that player, doesn't
it? Okay, but
big guy, can't move, probably slugs.
Yeah, you can take everything into account, but
slash line doesn't slug much.
I'm an active and still very good player.
Okay. Okay, this is good. This is a treasure hunt. This is a good detective piece.
All right, and so then you've got a couple of minutes to figure it out, and I will tell you who I am on the other side of this brief timeout on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or drinkhint.com. Hint, mouth-watering water. I gave you an assignment to figure out.
Yeah, you did.
Who am I? An active baseball player with a career slash line of 263, 353, and 498. That's an OPS of 851. And through my age, the most similar players to me happen to be a fairly star-studded list of 10. Frank Howard, Gil Hodges, Willie Stargell, Jack Clark, Mark Teixeira, Jermaine Dye, Joe Carter, Jose Canseco, Boog Powell, and Paul Konerko. And I have to tell you that we make fun of the Score text line all the time.
No, all the time. Well, they make fun of us.
Outstanding work by the texters.
They nailed it.
Outstanding.
I have not looked at the text line. You
I'm
told me
not
to.
Very impressed.
I'm getting the feeling that they did their homework better than I did mine. You said an active player. Can this player be on the disabled list? I mean, like, theoretically, he could be injured at some point.
Can. I don't believe he is.
All right. Well, then that, I thought my good guess was Ryan Zimmerman, but he is on the 10-day injured list. So not Ryan Zimmerman.
It is not Ryan Zimmerman, although now I will be interested to see if there's any cross over with some of these names on his list.
The collected athleticism of your list, you know, with guys like Paul Konerko and Jose Canseco and all these dudes, it made me think of Daniel Murphy, but it's not Daniel Murphy. I know it's not Daniel Murphy because he carries a higher career average
than
the 263, I would bet.
Let me give you, at the moment, I am 35 years old.
Nelson Cruz.
No.
No, really? I thought...
No, excuse me. Excuse me. 36. I apologize.
I thought I could narrow this down with
36. I am also leading the American League in a certain statistical category. I am the American League home run leader.
Oh my God! Really?
Yes.
Really?
Really.
Well, that is just crazy. Edwin Encarnacion.
Indeed. Edwin Encarnacion, who just hit his 400th MLB home run, who is leading the American League with 20 home runs at age 36 for Seattle, with a current slash line of 245, 356, 532, is currently at an 888 OPS above his career number there, a 140 OPS plus. That is who I am.
Do you know what Edwin Encarnacion makes me think of all the time? And there's no reason for us to have this in the vault, but I know that it happened. I was watching the game. When Edwin was on the Reds, right, coming up as a mm-hmm. younger-ish player, as a third baseman who really didn't need a glove because he didn't use it all that often, he comes up in a in a down one situation in the ninth, right? On a home game for the Reds, and Rick Sutcliffe is casting this thing. You know, it was when he was doing some of his stuff there for local broadcast. So this is a while ago, but he does his typical red ass thing where he's like, oh, Edwin's up here. He's not the kind of competitive at bat that you're going to see win this ball game. You just need Edwin to work himself a walk or something like that. And he, as a home broadcaster, is like handing it to Edwin Encarnacion, because there were some stories about him when he was a Red about not being all that interested in baseball in general. But there he is, Sutcliffe giving him hell. Next pitch, walk-off shot by Edwin Encarnacion, and Sutcliffe is silent the entire time that Edwin's walking around the bases. It was great.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, the Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves. I'd like to thank their loyal fans for making the 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October.
So you mentioned to me the new stat that Baseball Savant has put out. We talked about it with Joe Sheehan some. And, you know, before we get to the midway in a little bit, and then we've got Mark Deeks at 11, we can circle back into the NBA and all of the ripple effects that are going to happen from Kevin Durant's injury. I wanted to get into a little bit this new stat, this idea that cameras inside the ballpark are now going to, and this isn't, For those of you who are immediately like, oh, no more stats. I don't need more stats.
It's not really a stat.
It's not a stat.
It's a measurement of something that's actually happening. It's not a statistic, really.
This is my favorite part of the new advanced way that we're watching baseball. It is taking the scout's eye and just measuring what he or she is seeing. It's the best part of it. It's doing all the things that these old crusty scouts back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, all the way up until Moneyball in 2003, when things really started to change and quickly. But it's taking all this old scout knowledge and going, okay, we know that scouts think that jump matters. Baseball fans know that.
Well, we know it does.
Of course. So now these scouts go out and they try and find these outfielders, because that's what we're measuring right now, outfielders, and just how quickly they move and how much ground they cover once a fly ball is hit to them. So by making the better route happen, by covering more ground in the first 3 seconds, which is what this new StatCast jump metric is, you now take the scout, the dude who's on the backfield at Texas Abilene or something like that, and trying
Abilene.
To find that. Yeah,
you know, only you call it.
I
Abilene.
Gave it to you for that. So you're having that scout out there and going through those distances, and now he gets to take that, not yet, but he'll take that distance back and go, you know, I thought I saw something here, and here's that number. It's, you know, whatever feet in 3 seconds, this dude can go get him.
This is the jump measurement, according to Baseball Savant, which is at baseballsavant.mlb.com/jump. Go ahead. It is 0 to 3 seconds, feet covered in the correct direction. There are three components of it. Reaction, that's 0 to 1.5 seconds mm-hmm. of feet covered in any direction. Burst, which is 1.6 to 3 seconds of feet covered in any direction. And then both of those are measured against the route that's taken from 0 to 3, feet covered against the direct route to the ball. So it is how quickly you go somewhere, and then how quickly it's the right somewhere.
So
the extent to which it's the right somewhere.
You have the leaderboard up.
I do. Let me ask you, who do you think is the highest rated White Sox outfielder in jump?
You know, I happen
and to, I will tell you, he's third in MLB.
I know this because it's been on White Sox Twitter for the last, I don't know, 24 hours since this thing came out.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, I was there in 16 when this guy came up and started playing a whole lot of outfield. I watched it happen. The degree to which he must have gotten better is astounding. It's a testament to everybody who's worked with him in the outfield, his own athleticism, his want to, because for 2 years, this guy was not a good outfielder. And now, apparently, he's really got things figured out.
Leury García is third in MLB at 2 feet better than average in his jump.
Good on him.
It doesn't sound like a lot, but that's 2 feet better in the first 3 seconds of going after a ball. Number one, not surprisingly, is Tampa Bay's Kevin Kiermaier.
Shocked.
At 2.9, and that is just a couple hundredths ahead of Guillermo Heredia, his teammate. With Tampa Bay. So two Tampa Bay outfielders are at the top of the league in this particular measurement. Who is the highest ranked Cub outfielder in jump, checking in at seventh best in all of baseball?
I would bet it's Albert Almora.
It is Albert Almora.
Yeah.
Albert Almora at 1.3 The list, the top 10 is Kiermaier, Heredia, Garcia, then Harrison Bader, Joey Rickard, Jackie Bradley Jr., Albert Almora, Odubel Herrera, Jared Dyson, and Lorenzo Cain.
Off the top of my head, if you took that top 10 and measured by sprint speed, I think Almora would probably be either 9th or 10th on that list. Everybody else is a pretty speedy dude. Almora, not so, not that he's slow necessarily, but he's not top end fast, and that's where his skill set gets so preternaturally awesome, is the fact that he reads the ball so well and does not make mistakes afterward.
And of course you're asking, who's the worst at this? And I will tell you, the guy who's the worst is so by far the worst.
Any chance he's also a former White Sox?
Yes, indeed.
I thought Melky Cabrera might make this.
Wow. That at negative 5.4 feet below average, Melky Cabrera at the very bottom of all qualified MLB players.
So,
I was a little surprised to see how bad Christian Yelich is, too.
Oh, that's interesting.
For an absolute top-end MLB player to be at negative 3.7, he's 95th out of 100.
So Melky Cabrera was always one of my favorite outfielders to watch because of exactly that. And I think that there is something, like in football, you have on-ball skills, right? The go-up-and-get-it type guy, your Alshon. Once that ball is up there, can you go up and get it? In baseball, there's something similar. If you've gotten yourself toward the baseball,
right,
there is then that next skill set that lets you, you know, either be athletic enough or read it enough to catch it. So you can be a bad outfielder. You can take bad reads and things like that, but also be athletic enough to get to a ball that you've somehow arrived at. And Melky was the perfect blend of awful outfielder, but if he got himself to the baseball, it was always entertaining to watch him bring it in because he was just athletic enough to make it look good.
I just noticed this, that in the producers, because we're not looking the producers in the eye at the moment in
right.
our culinary studio here at the Score, they're making fun of me because I said I was cold. And I told them, can we turn the temperature up? Because we always have this because Mully and Haw like to broadcast from a meat locker.
Well, sure, but the
Dan doesn't have legs.
It's understandable because Les Grobstein likes to be in a steam room where he raises his death's head moths from Suriname.
Mung beans.
Yes, whatever.
He sprouts them.
Growing in the studio or on his body somewhere. We don't know. So they make it cold and we come in and I don't know how to reset this thermostat. So the producers from the Bernstein and McKnight account just tweeted out, update: Dan Bernstein is cold. Caller 6 to the Score's contest line gets to come in and hold him gently until construction is completed, with an asterisk. The asterisk says caller 6 will absolutely not get to or want to come in and hold Dan gently until construction is completed.
I am interested in knowing if there are any Score listeners interested in holding Dan for a portion of the show.
And knowing our listeners,
I can think of a couple that would.
There are probably
holding him gently.
Yeah, it has to be gently.
It has to be gently.
Gently. That there are some who could probably warm me up in a hurry, no doubt. We got the Midday Midway coming your way. I have a brilliantly designed idea by a grocery store that backfired on them because it was executed too well. It was so clever, it was so good that it backfired on him. I also have a crime of opportunity that I've always kind of thought about. I think everybody does. This guy actually did it rather than just thinking about it.
News of a sequel we didn't know we needed, and also local vandalism has hit our fair burg. The Midday Midway is on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670, the Score.
The most important of the year.
3-4.
The most exciting thing.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Brought to you by ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. We started out by talking about a very strange outcome last night. It was a weird end of game in Game 5. It is now a 3-2 NBA Finals series. The Toronto Raptors leading. And at Scotiabank Arena, you had a victory that didn't feel as much like a victory because the Golden State Warriors staved off elimination but lost Kevin Durant to what appears to be a ruptured Achilles tendon. And frankly, we're playing the blame game. Just trying to figure out who knew what, who took what knowing risk or unknowing risk. and just trying to understand how something like that could have been allowed to happen.
At 11, we'll see how the dominoes may fall with Mark Deeks, one of our favorite NBA guests. That'll be a fun part to this conversation as well. We talked with Joe Sheehan, the smart folks at Baseball Savant have a brand new stat. We took a look at that, where some Cubs and White Sox sit on them, and we played guess who that player is, and it was Edwin Encarnacion, and I didn't see it coming. He's had a hell of a career. All right, so we're always keeping an eye out for news signs of the end times here on the Midday Midway, and I think I may have one. This from the Associated Press. Scientists are predicting a near-record Gulf of Mexico dead zone, where the water holds too little oxygen to sustain marine life. Did you know that this existed? That this is a constant thing? I didn't realize that this was a major factor contributing to the large dead zone this year is the abnormally high amount of spring rainfall in many parts of the Mississippi River watershed. That led to record amounts of water carrying large amounts of fertilizer and other nutrients downriver. So I guess those fertilizers and nutrients then feed algae in the Gulf of Mexico.
The bloom. Yep.
They die and then decompose on the seafloor, and that uses up oxygen. And then there's this 7,800 square mile mass, roughly the size of Slovenia, for those of you Slovenians who listen to the show.
I can picture that easily.
Or basically the landmass of Massachusetts, where there can be no life in the Gulf of Mexico. So there we are. We're creating dead zones in large bodies of water, which would otherwise be teeming with life. And now we've killed it.
That's the same area where we talked about the tiger sharks that were feeding on songbirds, because they learned that the thunderstorms that created these rains and the flooding were pushing down these schools or flocks of migratory birds, and then the schools of baby sharks were coming up and eating the birds, and then the tiger sharks, the pregnant females, were learning to have their pups in those areas, and now that's all changed.
We are so screwed.
We've all thought about it. You see the pizza delivery guy gets out of the car or truck to deliver a pizza.
Yeah.
Sometimes they jump out without turning it off.
A lot of times.
Yeah, and you just think, you know, what if?
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, what if I just got in and became Pizza Man, a superhero origin story? Well, Great Falls, Montana. Court documents say a 20-year-old man stole a pizza delivery vehicle and was found with incriminating pizzas soon after. 20-year-old Isaac Wells on Sunday around 4:30 stole a Howard's Pizza truck. And I don't know Howard's Pizza. You've spent more time out in Big Sky Country than I have.
Still don't know Howard's.
There used to be a Hungry Howie's, I remember, but I don't know Howard's Pizza. But an employee, Steve Cradiger, reported the stolen vehicle and said it not only had pizzas inside, but his personal cell phone.
In total,
the delivery truck was valued at $18,000, and several people later called and reported a Howard's Pizza delivery truck driving erratically towards the College of Technology. My guess is it's not coincidence.
We found our man.
I guess it's probably what you're looking for. So Wells allegedly ditched the truck at Aspen Apartments, grabbed pizza, and got into a light blue 90s Oldsmobile with four other people. And they tracked him down, and they found the stolen keys, pizza, and cell phone. And he smelled strongly of alcohol, according to reports.
And what were the BACs for everybody in that car?
He refused to take a breathalyzer test, but he was arrested and held on three counts of theft, driving without a valid license, reckless driving, unlawful possession of an intoxicating substance. But
Howard's Pizza is that good,
I will just say, I understand the feeling sometimes, because you just think maybe it gives you a shot at something.
This news just out, did not realize we had this coming. Pretty sure I'm happy about it. You tell me.
Okay.
It's from The Independent. A new film featuring a character from Coen Brothers' classic The Big Lebowski has been completed. John Turturro is bringing back his character Jesus Quintana for Going Places, a comedy that begins with him getting out of prison after being framed as a pedophile. After years of reports, Turturro has now told The Independent he's completed an edit he's happy with. I had to tweak it a little bit, but now I feel good about it, he said. It's a bit of a racy movie. It shows how stupid men are. That's what the movie is kind of about. The women are stronger, more together characters. He also added that the film has been approved by Joel and Ethan Coen.
What's their involvement?
Yeah, so it's got their blessing, it's got their imprimatur, but it's not their movie itself. Still, I think that I
trust Turturro with this? Because name a movie he's bad in.
This is a remake of a 1974 French film of the same name that is being considered a spinoff of The Big Lebowski.
I thought it was an inspired. I don't think it's a remake. I think it's...
It's the Wikipedia calls it a remake.
Oh, okay.
It says, like the original Going Places, it follows a trio of sexually depraved misfits, played by Turturro, Bobby Cannavale, and Audrey Tautou.
Yeah, Susan Sarandon's in it as well, I think.
She is. She plays an ex-con. Sonia Braga is in it. Pete Davidson is in it.
No Big Lebowski characters are expected to show up in the film. However, Jeff Bridges has admitted he'd be up for doing a cameo as the dude in the movie. I think, often we do news of sequels here on the Midday Midway. I think this is one that doesn't suck as much as some of the other sequels we've reported are. I think I can get into this.
So there's a grocery store in Vancouver that really wanted to get people to start bringing their own reusable shopping bags. And this was instead of having the Chicago bag tax, they decided to try to come up with some creative ways to make people not want the store's plastic bags. And I don't know about you, I'm pretty good about that. I've got reusable bags because I don't want to pay
almost always.
Want to pay the 7 cents. Every once in a while, you need to have some of those bags, so you got to pay the and the paper bags I use for recycling, so I get those as well. But I'm pretty good about it. So this is absolutely brilliant. So brilliant, it backfired on East West Market. They decided to make their bags too embarrassing to carry around.
Okay.
And this is a version of the Walmart fallacy. Not fallacy, but the what always happened to me when I shopped at Costco, I should say.
Okay.
When I shopped at Costco back in the day when we had little kids and it made sense, they give you some random container to bring things home in. Some random
piece of cardboard, old boxes. Yeah, sure.
And it was always like hemorrhoid cream or something. It's like, wow. And you set it on the garage, next to the garage in the back. Right. And then we're like, boy, Bernstein goes through a lot of lube. You know. So what they've done is, on their plastic bags, one of them says it's from Into the Weird Adult Video Emporium. The second one is the Colon Care Co-op. And the third one is Dr. Taves's Wart Ointment Wholesale.
Yep, I'm going to need all those bags.
Right, so that's what's happening.
Those are collector's edition.
And of course, it's completely backfired, and now everybody is flocking to East West Market so they can get these supposedly embarrassing bags.
I'm going to make them into T-shirts. They're great.
Yeah, the Into the Weird Adult Video Emporium, and everybody wants. Not only are they not embarrassed, it's actually now a cool thing.
If you live in town, I've told you a couple of times, you ought to be following the folks at Block Club at Chicago.
It's great.
Hyper local news, individualized to each and every neighborhood around town. They do some really stellar hyper local reporting. This is from Kelly Bauer, and it reads thusly. A masked man is smearing poop on Bridgeport homes and cars.
What?
And sometimes hiding it under car door handles so the victims can't see it. That's happened at least a dozen times in recent weeks, with one person even catching the vandal on video as he rubbed fecal matter, either human or dog, no one's sure, on someone's car in late May.
What's he doing?
Late to work, Tony Wu of Bridgeport said he almost fell for the foul trick last week. He went to his car, was about to open the door when he spotted the stuff under the handle. Afterward, he talked to neighbors and posted to a Neighborhood Watch Facebook group, curious to see if anyone else had experienced anything similar. Comments poured in. Turned out there have been at least 15 incidents in the neighborhood over the last month, and half of them based on reports of Wu's that have gotten further than Bridgeport residents. So it's getting into this guy or person or whomever is getting into Chinatown now and is wiping stuff on cars and doors. If you know who this person is, turn them in. This is disgusting. It is gross, and it should not be happening in the fine neighborhood of Bridgeport or Chinatown for that matter. It's usually an early morning thing between 3 and 5 a.m., the culprit has been seen wandering the neighborhood with a duffel bag full of paper towels and what we assume has to be the material with which he smears. It appears to be a 30 to 40-year-old man, balding, wearing glasses, typically wears a mask. Be on the lookout for this person. He's up.
That's the Midday Midway. We do it every day right around 10:40. And coming up next, one of the smartest and most informed NBA voices out there, Mark Deeks of Sky Sports NBA in London, is going to join us next with his thoughts on last night and all of the ramifications as we await the official injury news for what we're all pretty sure is obviously a ruptured Achilles tendon for one Kevin Durant. All that is coming your way next. Keep it here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.